Welcome into this edition of Football Americas on what is March 7th, 2022. This was actually supposed to be our one-year anniversary special, but given the horrific events that we witnessed on Saturday night in a Liga MX match between Querétaro and Atlas, there's really nothing for us here at Football Americas to celebrate. So instead, for the next half hour, 45 minutes, or however long it takes, we will be focused entirely on what happened at La Corregidora in Querétaro, and not just what the fallout will be for those involved, but also what the fallout will be across Mexican soccer. Let's start with what we know right now. We know that fighting between fans of Querétaro and Atlas broke out right at the hour mark as the two teams were playing at La Corregidora, Querétaro's home stadium, on Saturday night. Official reports have 26 people injured, three of them listed in critical condition. There are no official reports as of right now of any deaths. However, there are reporters in Mexico who are claiming that there were deaths in and around the stadium. As of right now, local authorities have announced that there are 15 arrest warrants out for those involved. However, as we go to air, almost 48 hours from the incident, as of what we know, no arrests have yet been made. You'll get our reaction in just a second, but first, let's hear the reaction from Mexico over the weekend.
Uno está avergonzado de esto, sin ser un protagonista de esta violencia.
Estos barbajanes de Querétaro no es la primera vez.
No había policías dentro del estadio.
Tres personas de Gallo, de la porra de Gallos, nos quisieron atacar, y nos protegió el portero de Gallos, de hecho.
No, por ahora no, amigo. Por ahora dijeron que no.
Nos hacen creer de que el fútbol es de vida o muerte, y el fútbol es, como se dice, lo más importante de lo menos importante.
Datos oficiales indican que hasta este momento no tenemos fallecidos por los condenables hechos del día de ayer.
Me parece que esto ya pasó en otras latitudes, y como que el mensaje no nos queda claro.
Sea cual sea la decisión que se tome, esto sea un parteaguas para que no vuelva a suceder un hecho así.
Las barras visitantes a partir de hoy ya no van a poder ir a los estadios.
Hoy chicos que vienen a entrenar con una lágrima, con el dolor de escuchar a su hijo decirle: papá, no quiero que vayas más o que juegues más a la pelota. No sería nada extraordinario que alguien llegara mañana y diga: no quiero continuar. Nada extraordinario. El equipo está quebrado, emocionalmente está quebrado. Estamos.
Es que crecimos y creemos en los valores del deporte. Por eso estamos todos acá juntos, porque queremos un fútbol sin violencia y en paz.
Welcome into our studios. Herc, Seb, joining us for this special edition of Football Americas, Mauricio Pedrosa. Mauricio, thanks for the time. Guys, what a dark, dark weekend. I know for all of us, both as members of the media, as Mexican-Americans, it was really hard to watch. Herc, I'll start with you, just kind of your first thoughts as you saw what you saw unfold on your television screens and on social media.
Yeah, more on social media, because what I saw on my television screen didn't really tell me what was going on. I was notified by Mauricio, who was actually watching the game, and as I, like everybody else at home, refreshed my timeline on social media, and I saw these horrific acts unfold, saw families fleeing onto the field, little kids holding onto their father's hands, a father take cover over his son because his son is wearing the rival jersey. Mm. As a father, it's heartbreaking, but then it's, as I saw more and more detail, fans being beaten, left bloodied, in what looked like an act where they were leaving them naked as trophies. I've never seen anything like that in a football stadium revolving around a sport. I've seen that in organized crime, but I've never seen that in a football stadium. It was jarring.
Yeah, it's hard to overstate just how jarring the images were. I mean, that's how awful it was.
Yeah, I was in shock. I mean, there's no other way to put it. I couldn't believe what I was watching, and I tried to be as calm as possible because, as Herc stated, I was watching the game, and I heard the reports of the sideline reporter by TUDN, and he started to explain that something was going on. And we've all been in stadiums, and we've probably, sadly, been in stadiums where fights erupt, right? Fans fighting against each other. But we've never seen this before. I just don't recall. And I try, because you go back and think, we had the hooligans in England, right? We had the start of Barra Bravas in South America. But those images that we saw coming out of Querétaro, I never thought that I would see those from a sporting event. And I was shocked again. I was saddened. I was very concerned because I had two friends that were at the stadium. One of them was working. We'll have him in a few minutes here giving his testimony on Football Americas. And to me, the worst part was realizing we lost control. Mm. I do not know if we can go back to normal.
Yeah.
I don't know if we ever are going to be back in Mexico, going to the stadium, feeling safe.
Yeah.
And that's the saddest part for me.
I'm taken by the magnitude of it, and I'm with you. This feels like a kind of before and after moment.
Yeah.
You know, if you're talking to anybody who grew up in the United States around the turn of the millennium, and you say, I was doing this, but that was before 9/11.
Right.
You know exactly what they mean in that context. I think we're going to have conversations in 10, 20 years where you say, oh, but that was before Querétaro. That was before La Corregidora. I think it's kind of one of those seminal moments. To your points about the images, we have never seen anything this bad come out of a soccer stadium. I'm not saying that things this bad have not happened in or around soccer stadiums. This was unique because there were thousands, if not tens of thousands of people with cell phone cameras documenting everything. And what I think the big takeaway for me is, once you get 24, now almost 48 hours away from it, is those images are never going away. Those are going to be the images of Mexican soccer moving on for a long time, if not forever. Because as I sit here and I think to myself, what would it take to overcome those images? What would Mexico have to do on the international soccer stage to overcome the images that we saw at La Corregidora? Win 3 World Cups? Create the best player of all time? All of that seems short.
I don't even think it's about winning, you know, for people to forget. It's about these generations moving on and future generations coming in and not realizing, not seeing that unfold themselves. That's the most difficult thing. It's easy for somebody to tell you, but once you see it, you can't unsee it.
Yeah.
It was so bad that I told my family members, don't watch.
Yeah.
I have to see because this is what I do for a living. What I told them, and I'm talking about adults, I'm not talking children.
Yeah.
Do not watch because those images will haunt us forever. And again, I believe there's no going back. Now, we have way to go here in the show to talk about repercussions, what needs to be done. One of the biggest questions was, why was that not done before?
Mm.
Why did we have to reach this point?
Let's get to the response from Liga MX, at least in the hours since the tragedy. The first thing that we learned, Mikel Arriola, the president, told us that Barras, the supporters groups that are kind of known as I think the central points in issues like this, are banned from traveling to stadiums. We also found out today that Jornada 10, the next match day in Liga MX, is going to go on as scheduled, with maybe the possible exception of the Querétaro-Necaxa match, which is scheduled for Friday night. What'd you make of the response? You've covered this league for a long time.
I thought it was weak. I was ashamed because we all saw what was happening at the moment. And the fact that the other games went on, Monterrey, America, Puebla, Cruz Azul, the league had to be stopped in that moment because there were no guarantees that how can we play on knowing what we knew at the moment? How could we play on while people were fighting for their lives? So I thought just the response, the first response was weak. And then the second response, which was, we're going to ban traveling support groups. I mean, the moment Mikel Arriola was giving that statement, right? Because he said, and I'm going to say this in Spanish, las barras. I thought he was going to say, are banned forever. Mm-hmm. But when he said, are not going to be allowed to travel, I was like, this guy doesn't get it. Mm. What benefit do we have from those Barras Bravas being in the stadiums? So I thought it was very weak.
Is it, Herc, a situation where Mexican soccer cannot afford to distance themselves from the Barras? Like, why not, do you think, ban this group entirely? That seems to have been an obvious step here that Arriola left on the table.
It's a great question.
I'm sorry to make you answer for that, but you have probably the most close contact with Barras of any of the three of us.
Listen, I've been in situations with Barras as a footballer where they want a stipend. Mm. They want money. You know, they want you to help them with their travel. They want tickets. They always want something.
Like, I'm sorry, they'll come to you as a player for this?
Yes, yes. And I've heard of situations, not just in Mexico, mm-hmm. in Greece, from fellow national team players where ownership groups are so tied into these Barras, they mm-hmm. will allow them to come on to a team bus when a team isn't doing well and threaten the players. They use these Barras to their convenience. Now, if I could briefly go back to why these games were played, because that's what everybody wants to know. Right. Why were these three other games played? Money. Mm. The gate. The sponsorships. The TV deals. All this going on, they don't happen. These teams, and it's happened to be three of the biggest teams in Mexico, America, Monterrey, and Chivas, are going to lose money. Now, when all eyes are on Mikel Arriola, because he came on Football Picante on these airwaves and ESPN, bandas, what, de animación? Is that what he's calling them?
Yeah.
He wouldn't even say Barras. He wouldn't say Ultras. He wouldn't say hooligans. He would call them like he's whatever he wants to make up to make them seem less dangerous than they really are. The reality is they shouldn't have in place. They shouldn't be opposing Barras. It should be all Barras.
I want to add one more thing to that. We just have to go last week. What happened in Monterrey, right? Another group of Barra Bravas outside of the training facility were stopping players and demanding that they got out of their cars and talk to them. We saw how many players were stopped by those Barras. How many security members from the team came out and said, this is not happening. It didn't happen.
What was the conversation, Mal? This can escalate.
When these Barra
members are drawing figures of their players and management's heads in coolers and thinking that is okay, what do you think's going to happen? And we're at a critical moment, not only in the sport, because now it's bled into everyday life. It's bred into society. It's bred into the president of Mexico making declarations, you know, talking about what's going on, governors, presidents of municipalities, mayors. It's trending worldwide. You can no longer ignore it. They've been trying to ignore these things. You can no longer ignore it.
As we kind of focus our scrutiny here on individuals, I think there's two names that are probably key. One we mentioned, Mikel Arriola, right, the president of Liga MX. The other is Adolfo Rios, who's the president of Querétaro. Mexican fans will know him, longtime player with América and briefly with the national team as well. I was taken aback, Mal, when I saw Adolfo Rios come on this network, on ESPN Deportes, and start giving what was basically a medical update on the victims who were Atlas fans. That felt like a dark and wholly unnecessary PR exercise. And I can't, for any good reason, understand why the sporting director of a club would be giving us that information. I wonder what you think of what we've seen from Rios and also from Arriola.
Well, I'm going to start with Adolfo Rios. I think he's just a team employee. And he was made the non-official spokesperson, right? We reached out to both team owner, team's president, and both directed us to Adolfo Rios. So now, unofficially, it's like he's the face of the team and he's going to be the one speaking. I agree with you. I don't believe that's his spot. That being said, I believe he said what he had to say. And he acted the way he had to act. I don't think he had much leeway to act in any way different. Now, and we are actually right now seeing during the brawl, Adolfo Rios coming down from his box and just trying to assist the people that were in the middle of chaos. At least I'm going to give him credit for that. He shouldn't be doing that. That's supposed to be someone from security, right? Police officers, not team's general manager. And from Mikel Arriola, I think he took too much time figuring out what was going on. Mm. I don't know if he had to consult with John de Luisa, the president of the Mexican Federation. He was actually traveling to Europe when all this was going on. But I saw a lack of leadership that was very, very concerning because it's on his powers to stop the Liga and make tougher decisions. And he just didn't do it.
Wow, Seb, it makes you wonder who's really running this.
Exactly. Well, we all know who's running the show.
If Mikel Arriola, amidst everything going on, can't make an executive decision, like, hold on, this has gone far enough, cease operations, we're done. and then I'll talk to the owners. Because we know how Liga MX operates. It's 18 owners who make decisions for the league and the federation.
Yeah. There's also probably something to be said for the buck always does stop at the end of the day on the president's desk, right? And if you look at this, there were reasons to be worried about this, not one of which that I think we haven't really touched on too much is there was violence even before this happened in this match. So whatever protocols the league has to deal with fan violence were clearly either ignored or if they were in place, they're not adequate. They're really not adequate. You can't have something happen in the first half that escalates to something in the second half. I mean, you had your warning.
But I think it's clear. What protocols? I was looking at these protocols, right, earlier today, and it states for every 100 fans in attendance, they recommend two security officials, not police, two security officials, private, whatever they want, two. Yeah. Two versus 100. The stadium has capacity for 35,000 fans. They only had barely, maybe 600. Is that really going to stop a brawl? You saw the videos, you saw the B-roll we just put out. There were security guards on their phones. Mm. There was a goalkeeper literally telling one of the guards, like, are you not going to go up to the stands and stop this? And the guards, what is going on that they think in a game with already a history of violence. This isn't the first time these two fan bases have clashed. Already a history of violence, yeah. These two.
It's called a high-risk game.
A high-risk game that something like this would not happen.
Mm. That leads me to believe that this just didn't happen out of the blue. This leads me to believe that there was more going on behind the scenes.
That it was orchestrated.
That it was orchestrated. And it's not me saying it, right? It's actually the governor of the state of Jalisco, Atlas, placing Guadalajara. Guadalajara belongs to the state of Jalisco. The governor said that all indications are that this was pre-planned, that there was orchestrated. And for many years, we wondered, right, why were teams in control of this Barras? Well, now I believe Barras are in control of the clubs. And the bigger question now is, who's controlling those Barras, right? Because it's clearly someone who shouldn't be allowed in a soccer stadium anywhere in the world, not only in Mexico.
What about the decision to return to play as early as Saturday? I'll ask you first because you're a player, right? So imagine being an active Liga MX player right now. What would that be like? Would you be comfortable playing a game 7 days after what we saw happen?
So part of me is thinking this is my job. This is what I have to do. The other part of me is thinking I'm a father. Like I'm seeing those images right now and I couldn't imagine being on the field and thinking, where's my wife? Mm. Where are my kids? Where are my family members, my friends? Like, what is going on? Like, could they be in trouble in some of this, for lack of a better word, crossfire? You know, could they be in the crosshairs or something? It's sickening to think, like, you still got to go out there and perform.
Yeah.
All eyes are on you right now. And if you don't, it's a breach of contract. Like, how dumb is that? You feel like you're not safe and you're a player, like your family's not safe and you're a player. You're supposed to be the entertainment. That's the worst part of this is we could talk here about on a social level how Mexico is as a country, all these different things. It's a beautiful country. And for 90 minutes, you could escape whatever's going on and go into refuge here. And you can't even do that anymore.
What about the fan perspective, Mal? Like, would you go to a game 7 days after what we just saw?
Well,
that's what Liga MX is asking their fans to do now.
Just gathering from social media reaction, and we all know social media is not real life, but at least that's what we have. Mm-hmm. I was very surprised to see how fans were also asking the league to stop playing because they also do not feel safe, right? You have kids. I do not have kids.
Look
at the banner, right?
That's right before the game.
That's supposed to be the motto of Liga MX. We're playing. Grita por la paz, right?
Yell for peace.
Yell for peace. As a fan, how can I go back and enjoy 90 minutes of soccer while also be concerned, worry about what may happen in the stands? And here's why. Because Adolfo Ríos, in that very same interview with ESPN, said something that it hasn't really been, talked much about, but I thought it was very concerning. He said, this time it happened to us. Mm. It can happen to any other team in Mexico. So what is he saying? He's saying that this thing that got out of control just happened to be in Querétaro, and that Barras as powerful in many other cities, teams in Liga MX, that's very concerning. And the fact that a league executive is saying this publicly makes me believe that no one's safe attending a soccer game in Mexico.
Listen, Seb, I don't want to go fear-mongering here, but what Mauricio is saying, and if what he's saying about it being orchestrated, it sure looked like that.
Yeah.
The videos we had seen, it looked like these fans were ambushed from all angles. Yeah. Now, if it is orchestrated, well, then what Adolfo Rios is saying makes sense. If you're a fan of another team, you don't want to take your family somewhere you don't feel safe. Seb.
Especially with Barras still allowed in the grounds. I mean,
exactly.
That's the reality we're operating under, isn't it?
That's what it is, Seb. I mean, you've been a longtime Mexican fan. America. And people always say, well, what if it happened to America? You're an America fan. If it happened to America, how safe would you feel going to Estadio Azteca?
I think the answer would be how safe anybody right now would
feel. It has happened before.
I wouldn't feel.
America, the team recognizes, right, admits that they have two very powerful ultras, yeah. right? La Monumental y El Ritual del Caos. They have clashed before. They've had issues before. The team actually, I was a reporter, this is probably 2007. The team banned El Ritual del Caos because they were very aggressive. And they went to the stadium just to create, that's their name, El Ritual del Caos. They were there to create chaos. The fact that home teams are still allowing ultras, home ultras in their stadium, How is this a solution?
Yeah.
How is this going to change things?
I think if anything, it tells us that at least as of right now, these groups have quite a significant stranglehold on Mexican soccer.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Our next guest on this special edition of Football Americas is Emmanuel Macias. He's a television and radio reporter from Mexico based out of Querétaro, and he was at La Corregidora on Saturday. Emmanuel, thanks so much for the time. Great to have you with us here on Football Americas.
Sebas, Mau, Hercules, it's a pleasure for me to be with you from Mexico, from Querétaro.
All right, let's get to what happened on Saturday night. I'm just curious to get your firsthand perspective of what happened in the minutes both immediately before the fighting erupted between Querétaro and Atlas fans, and then afterwards.
Yeah, Sebas, I am a reporter from a national radio station here in Querétaro in Mexico since the last season, and well, every game of Querétaro, I am on the right side of the Querétaro's bench in every game, and well, in the first half, everything seems to be normal. The group of fans are just singing at each other, just words, any aggression, anything of that. But in the second half, about the 60 minute, I start to see a fighting in the zone of the Gallos fans' seats. But the fight was each other. But I turn around the view to the other stand, the south stand, and I see it was a fight between the rivals, fans of Gallos and fans of Atlas. In my reporting, I say that something was wrong and start to take the risk about what will happen in the next minute. So I turn around again in the corners of the field. In the corners, I start to see a group of people, a group of fans of Atlas and Querétaro. But in the first scene, to be people that want to keep safe for the fightings in the stands. But in that moment, I think was the inflection point when the group of fans that wants to fight have the opportunity to invade, literally invade the field and start all the discontrol, all the violence. I have seen image that I think I will never see again. I go to the Corregidoria Stadium since I was a kid, but I never imagined to live what happened last Saturday. And the violence was cruel. You can see in the media, in the social media, all the videos that came from.
Emmanuel, you being there, when did you realize that it was not your typical, and it's probably not the right word, but we've seen fights every once in a while, fans losing control, but when did you realize this was different?
Yeah, it's just that moment that I told you in the 16 minute. Normally, as you say, there was only one fight and the elements of security just separate them and that's all. But that was incredible. That was out of my mind. They were a lot of fights in the different sectors of the stadium. That moment is when I realized that was not normal, and I told in my reporting that something wrong are happening. We have been living in the stadium some fights before, but never like the Saturday in the afternoon in the stadium. That was the moment when I see some points of the stadium with fights and nobody trying to put order. Mm.
Emmanuel, that's where I want to get to. You were in the field level, and fans were fleeing the field in safety. I mean, they must have been worried for their lives. At what point did you see, if any, security? Where was security in all this?
Yeah, the security protocol, it means that about 600 elements of security, about in private security, state police, and local police. That was all the elements of security in the stadium. But it was something rare, because all the police are out of the stadium, nor inside of the stadium. I think the protocol was prepared for the fights outside of the stadium, mm-hmm. not inside. But that's what happened.
Emmanuel, we're getting a lot of talk, rumors that Querétaro could be banned from Liga MX. You're there in Querétaro. What are the fans saying about the future of their team and what it might hold? Are they worried that they might lose Gallos Blancos forever?
Yeah, the feelings are many. Of course, the people that me, for example, I'm from here, I'm born here in Querétaro, we are ashamed for what happened, mm-hmm. of course. And that's one of the feelings. We are ashamed for what happened, the people that were hurt. But also, it's sad. It's sad to think that we won't have a team for the rest, maybe for the rest of our lives, because they say that the team will be banned for the rest, or for a long time at least. So it's an environment of sadness. Of course, people are angry, because for a group of fans, or if you want to call it fans, for that fans, we will pay a lot of people. The fans, my colleagues, that we are reporters, that we are press, also affect to us, the families. It's a lot beyond what happened this Saturday, beyond this group of fans that we call Barras.
Emmanuel, we really appreciate your time and, more importantly, your invaluable perspective in this matter. Thank you so much, and hopefully we can talk to you again soon on Football Americas under very different circumstances.
Thanks to you, Sebas, Mao, Hercules. I send you a real regards from Mexico and from Querétaro.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
All right, so here's a statement from CONCACAF on the matter. The shocking acts of vandalism and violence that occurred last night in Querétaro, Mexico, have no place in football or society. The thoughts of everyone at CONCACAF are with their victims of these awful events and their families. CONCACAF wholly condemns these types of behaviors. We call on the local authorities to fully investigate these criminal acts and to hold accountable those who have tarnished our game. The Confederation also believes that strong football sanctions must be applied and will provide any necessary support to the FMF and Liga MX as they investigate. That from CONCACAF. Let's take it up a level to FIFA. Here's what FIFA had to say. FIFA is shocked at the tragic incident that took place at La Corregidora Stadium in the city of Querétaro during the fixture between Querétaro and Atlas. The violence was unacceptable and intolerable. FIFA joins the Mexican Football Association and CONCACAF in condemning this barbaric incident and encouraging the local authorities to bring swift justice to those responsible. Our thoughts are with all those who suffered its consequences. All right, gentlemen, so now may be a good time to discuss the possible sanctions for Querétaro as a club. Now, what we do know is that Tuesday, tomorrow, there's an emergency meeting of Liga MX owners. We expect some of Querétaro's fate to be decided then. What do you think that fate should be?
What I think it should be is Querétaro has no place in Mexican soccer anymore. They just show the lack of control. They're not prepared to be a Primera División team. And I don't know if that's going to happen, but I think it will send a message, right? Because the images that we saw had no precedent in the history of Mexican soccer. So the punishment probably has to be unprecedented as well. I'm not sure if that's going to happen. I don't know if that's going to be the case. Reports are that there is a very strong group of owners that are pushing for the disaffiliation of Querétaro from La Liga MX. I believe that's what happened because people are now saying, hey, what about the under 20 teams? What about the women's team? What about the under 17 teams, the academy? Well, what about the people that almost lost their lives, right? So if you cannot, as a ownership group, guarantee the security, the safety of your fans, of players, of staff, then you shouldn't own a professional soccer team in Mexico.
What do you think, Herc?
I'll start off with the statements from CONCACAF and FIFA that, to me, are very weak.
Yeah. It feels like a washing of the hands, or at least a quick distancing, right?
Quick distancing is a very good term. That's what it is right there. So, very weak. I've gone through this a bunch in my head. Mao just mentioned the U-20 team, the U-17 team, the Fuerzas Básicas, the community that depends on this team, the women's team, a whole town, city propped up on this corporation because it's a brand. It's not just a team, it's a brand. All those people that depend on this team. But after what we've seen, I don't see how you can't vote to kick them out of Mexican football. If it means Querétaro is out of Mexican football, so we never see anything like this again, I'm okay with it. You talk about these jobs. In any business, any line of work, you're out of a job, you go find a job. There's a fianza, okay? There is money that the Federation has for these teams in case anything like this happens, so they can pay off the players, all those involved, give them their money, allow them to be free agents, and find a different line of work. But the ownership group of Querétaro, of Gallos, should never be tied around Mexican football again. One of the owners, one of the investors in Querétaro is an American by the name of Greg Taylor, who also happens to be an agent.
Yep.
He also happens to have his hands in other teams with other players and coaches.
And that's not obvious conflict of interest.
If that's not a conflict of interest, so you're starting off bad. From the ownership group to the way that Querétaro became a first division team, having to buy their promotion, because that was Chiapas.
Yep.
That wasn't Querétaro's.
If you do kick Querétaro out forever, right, you set a precedent. And to your point, it's a precedent that I think would send a very strong message. But I can't help but think, especially what you just mentioned about Adolfo Rios, that this could have happened anywhere. So what if this had happened at Azteca? Or what if this had happened at a Chivas match? I mean, those are the two, or Tigres, or Rayados, or any of the big, big brands of Mexican football. Do you think that kicking them out forever would still be on the table? Or is this because it's Querétaro?
It's because it's Querétaro.
It'd never be enough.
If this had happened to America, Pumas, Chivas, we wouldn't be having this conversation to kick the team out of the league forever.
Right.
But I think there's also different context to that, right? Because I personally spoke about my experience with Club America and how they handled having two barras, not only one, two ultras, right? And how they handled the situation. Apparently, they did what the Federation asked them to do, and they were able to control the problem right on the spot. Now, can this happen to another team like Atlético de San Luis? Yeah, it might happen, yeah. Right? And we don't question the ownership group, right? Because the owners, they are Atlético de Madrid, one of the most respected institutions in world soccer. So I do understand that this is Querétaro. This is not the strongest team. And that's why we believe it's, quote unquote, easier to punishment this hard.
Now, that precedent you're talking about, if they kick Querétaro out, if it happens to an Américo or Chivas, certainly you must do the same. Is
right.
Exactly why I
no
feel
doubt.
It
no
won't
doubt.
Happen.
Yeah. Right.
You, exactly
so what do you
I
think
feel.
We'll get? Maybe a ban for the rest of the season?
I think we're going to get a Querétaro Corregidora ban for the rest of the year. This ownership group will have to sell. They'll probably give them a six-month timetable term to sell. And then they will be out of Mexican soccer. Out of Mexican soccer, I should say, because I don't think that people will forget. You mentioned the big team. Jorge Vergara, may he rest in peace. Before he passed away, was one of the only owners that was a proponent in trying to eliminate these barras from Mexican football. The owner of the biggest, arguably the biggest brand in Mexican football's history doesn't want the ultras, doesn't want the barras. Why? That you have to take a look at that, and why are the other owners shying away from this?
Yeah. If there's one thing I don't want to see in this resolution, look, that we just heard from Emmanuel, like the people of Querétaro who love this team are may lose this team, and that might be the just thing to happen based on how serious it was. What I would hate to see is the owners that you guys are talking about then allowed to sell this franchise, make their money back, while the people of Querétaro lose their team because these owners couldn't properly run a franchise. That, to me, would be a horrific shame.
So I heard from one executive earlier today, and I asked him, what do you think is going to happen, how the owners see tomorrow's meeting going down? And he said, it's hard to make that decision, right? Because there's a lot of money involved. There's TV money involved. There are contracts that are involved, player contracts, staff contracts. He said one of the solutions is, yes, forcing the owners to sell the team and banning the city, the state of Querétaro, to having a professional team for 5 or 10 years. Mm. Even if that happens, I do believe as a federation, as a league, you have to let them know that if this happens again anywhere else, this is what the punishment looks like for those who cannot control or to take the measurements that are needed in order to have a professional team nowadays.
Seb, one of the reasons I think you won't see something like a team getting kicked out is because I feel these owners have no idea how to protect the stadiums, have no idea what can happen next, have no idea or had no idea how much of a stranglehold, as you put it, these barras had on these teams.
So they don't want to set that precedent themselves.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we've talked about Querétaro. We focused on the club. Let's maybe go a little bit bigger picture now and kind of what this could mean for Mexican soccer as a whole. And there's two examples here that I want to draw from, right? 2012 in Egypt, the Port Said Stadium disaster. The Egyptian league didn't play for the next 2 years after that. We go back to 1985, final of the European Cup final, violence between Liverpool and Juventus fans. Not just Liverpool. All English teams were banned from European continental competition for 5 years. So if I'm a Mexican soccer fan, and I don't care at all about Querétaro, I'm still waking up this week very, very worried. Because if you think about those precedents, and then you think of everything that Mexico has to potentially lose in the coming years in terms of qualifying for the 2022 World Cup, hosting the 2026 World Cup, this could be disastrous, not just for Querétaro, for all of Mexican soccer, Mal.
Do you have that FIFA statement?
I do, yes.
Is there anywhere in that statement where it says that, and FIFA will conduct a thorough investigation to go to the root of the problem and punish whoever needs to be punished?
No. Not there.
I don't think either CONCACAF or FIFA are going to take any sort of measure on Mexican soccer. Should they? Yes, I believe they should. What? Will they? I don't think they will.
Hold on a second. Do you know when these owners start paying attention?
Money?
When their wallets are in danger. We'd have to be very naive to think that there isn't a possibility that FIFA may say, wait a second, we may lose this sodas brand. We may lose this photo company, we may lose this other multi-billion dollar sponsor.
You're saying because these sponsors wouldn't want to be associated with an event in Mexico because of what happened. Yeah.
Now, you have to be very naive to think that's not a possibility. Will it happen? I don't know. I'm not saying that. But you just put into question two different events.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? One very strong footballing nation. How many years for England?
Five years. 6 years for Liverpool, 5 years for the rest of the English.
You're not taking a World Cup out of a country that's all by themselves.
Right.
There's already two hosts along with Mexico, Canada, and United States.
It's very easy
for them to pull the plug. I'm not saying it'll happen. Well, we'd have to be very naive to think they wouldn't seriously consider it.
Third largest audience, third largest fan base at every World Cup is Mexico, right? First largest fan base, local fan base. Second largest fan base, Brazil, always. Third largest fan base is Mexico. Mexico means dollars for FIFA, for CONCACAF. I'm not saying that's the right way to go. I'm just putting facts, right?
Right.
And why I believe, because of those statements that you just read, and you question, and I am with you 100%. I also question those statements because I also believe they're washing their hands and it's up to you. There's nothing there that tells me that either CONCACAF or FIFA are going to go hard on Mexican soccer. Maybe it's because of business, or maybe it's just because they say, that's a local issue. That's not on us.
We have the World Cup coming in 2026. There's some stuff happening before that. We got a CONCACAF Champions League game this week between Montreal and Cruz Azul. That has to be dealt with.
Can you read the Major League Soccer statement on that, please?
I don't have one yet.
What do you mean?
Major League Soccer.
Did they not put out a statement?
We'll get to the MLS Liga MX tie in just a second. There's also the CONCACAF W Championship happening in Monterrey in the summer. And for a lot of our fans, there's the USA-Mexico game happening in 17 days. You know, I know you have, like, fans sliding literally into your DMs right now asking you, is it safe to go? What are you telling them?
I don't know. This is the worst part about this discussion because
you don't want to be a fearmonger.
I don't want to be a fearmonger, and I hate the way the rhetoric is going with this, okay? It's getting xenophobic.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Just if I can give you an example, just so we don't go down that line and not kind of identify it, the word Mexicans was trending on Twitter in the United States on Saturday night, and it was a lot of vitriol.
Believe me when I say the best part of Mexico isn't its beaches. It's not these beaches where you guys go tour, where you guys go on vacation, you go your spring break. That's not the best part. It isn't the pyramids that you see. It isn't the food that you love. The best part about Mexico is its people. And these people are suffering. And these people are being depicted in a manner that is not just. A few have ruined everything for the masses.
Mm.
It's happening again. And this xenophobic rhetoric online, in the media, by fans, it's sickening. But when you have fans literally DMing you, asking if you think, because you played in Mexico, because you're a former U.S. men's national team player, it's safe for them to go to El Estadio Azteca, to be in Mexico City. Like, it's got me questioning things. It's got me, like, to my core shook, like, how do I answer this? You know, how do I respectfully answer, yes, I think it's safe.
You want to be honest with them, but you don't want to paint Mexico in a bad light. But what's happened in Querétaro paints Mexican soccer in a bad light. I don't think there's any way to avoid that when we're talking about, you know, I know it's a different competition, it's different teams, but it is the Mexican national team. It is in Mexico. I think some of the fears that these people are sharing with you are valid.
Are valid. I want to go to the other side of it and say this. I do not have an answer for that question.
Right.
Is it safe? I don't know. I do not know the protocols. I'll say from my experience, right? From my experience, it is safe. And we are all planning to go down there and cover the game. And I want to give the Mexican Federation, I want to give Mexican soccer the benefit of the doubt. I want to give them the benefit of the doubt that they learned their lesson. They realized that they were not taking this seriously. Because, Herc, Sebi, in the back of our heads, we probably had this image of something like that happening in Mexican soccer. We just probably didn't want to believe it, right?
Yeah.
We probably said, this is not going to happen here. We've seen this other places. It's not going to happen here. Well, it finally happened, people. We got to wake up. So I have to expect our executives to wake up and from now on, making the stadiums, making the local rivalries, the international rivalries, a safe environment for the fans. Well, I want to give them the benefit of the doubt, but I don't have an answer for that.
That's what I'm getting at when I speak about the World Cup, and don't be so naive. We can't be so naive. It's if FIFA can't guarantee the safety of its consumers, mm-hmm. of the tourists, of the fans in its tournaments, then it shouldn't be hosting a tournament. Now, what we just seen, I don't think we will ever see again.
I pray that we don't.
And immediately, like right now is a time where the Mexican Federation, Liga MX, yeah. is under the microscope.
Yeah.
You know? It has to be now where you should feel the safest.
So, kind of the last string here that I think ties Liga MX to the American audience is Major League Soccer. And we've seen the two leagues combine so much over the years. It's almost like a pseudo-merger. And we know in 2023, we're getting the new expanded Leagues Cup. Do you think what happened Saturday night in any way puts that in jeopardy?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
You've got business owners, multi-billionaires as owners in Major League Soccer. Corporations, different teams, different sports, what have you, who know exactly where they invest their money and who they are in bed with. You don't think they're seeing this and going, wait a second, Don, you want me to do what?
Yeah. Yeah.
Should we not rethink this? You seen the images come out here? I know they're saying there's no casualties at the moment. I know that's what they're saying, but these videos that I'm seeing are very hard to ignore. Mm-hmm. I think that's the thing right now.
Yeah. It seems like it could be something for sure that gives at least folks on the MLS side mouse yeah. and pause.
Or at least it gives them some sort of leverage to just whenever this kind of relationship moves to a next level, right? To a next stage. How are we going to handle games? We're not going to go play down there. If you want to be in this relationship, you're going to have to come and play here. You guys have heard me many times saying that to me, this is like two people dating, right? So novios, Major League Soccer and Liga MX. And I've always believed they are approaching marriage, right? Like to formalizing their union. And this is probably a big, big hurdle to consummate that union. I think it's going to happen. I do believe, at the same time, though, that Major League Soccer now is entitled to ask questions. Mm-hmm. And not only to ask questions, but to demand answers from Liga MX. Because if they're going to go into a deeper relationship, well, if I'm an owner, leave alone an owner. If I'm a Major League Soccer player, right, after seeing this, do I want to go down there and play knowing that my safety, my family's safety, my team's safety is not guaranteed? The answer is no. Yeah. Again, just like I said with FIFA and CONCACAF, I'm giving the benefit of the doubt to the Mexican Federation and Liga MX that they are going to learn their lesson and this is not going to happen again. Do we have any guarantees for that? No, we don't. But at least that's what I expect from them.
When these two leagues have talked about doing business together, they've often talked about sharing best practices. This is probably a moment for Major League Soccer with their, I would assume at this point, much more advanced security protocols to step up and share that those best practices with Liga MX, because it's clear that the Mexican League needs help in that area. Let's get back to some of the reaction from around the world. And of course, we know there are Mexicans playing all over the place. They were obviously paying attention to this. Edson Alvarez, the Mexican international, playing for Ajax on Sunday. There you can see where we got the idea for the shirts we're wearing. No más violencia, no more violence. Herc, that was, right, the inspiration for yeah. you making, having these shirts made today?
The best six in CONCACAF inspired this idea. And man, seeing the way that when you leave home, you think about home.
Yeah. Yeah.
What must be weighing on their minds right now, you know?
These are scenes from Peru ahead of the Clásico de Lima between Sporting Cristal and Alianza Lima, a moment of silence for the victims of Saturday's violence in Querétaro. And so let's kind of wrap things up here with an acknowledgement, and that is that as of right now, there's been no reports of death in or around La Corregidora, the stadium, from official channels. Now, there have been reports from journalists in Mexico claiming that in one case, as many as 17 people passed away Saturday night in Querétaro. there's obvious reasons for doubt. There is skepticism about the fact that, we keep hearing from, especially Liga MX officials, no one has died or no one has died yet. Why do you think that skepticism is there, Mao?
Oh, man. Well, just because of what we saw, right? And none
of
us... Is it
just down to the videos, kind of the graph? It's hard to see those and believe that people survived?
That's number one. Number two is just hearing from people on the ground, like we heard from Emmanuel, and how we have been hearing from even Atlas Ultras that were interviewed after the chaos finally settled down. Some of them admitting that they had lost friends and also fans. So I think it all comes from what we saw and also from past experiences, right?
Yeah.
How government officials have handled similar situations.
Yeah.
It would be very irresponsible from a journalistic point of view just to contradict those reports.
Right.
Because we do not have that information and we're not going to make that mistake. No. But hearing from what we've heard from people on the ground, I think we at least have the right to wait for the government and the officials have to say in the end. But, I mean, what we saw, it would be a miracle if no one died. That's what I would say.
I don't consider myself a journalist.
Right.
I talk about sport. I talk about what my eyes see. It's very difficult to see those images, to see those videos, to hear the testimonies, mm-hmm. and not feel like maybe those numbers aren't true. It's even more difficult given the history of the Mexican people and the government.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I mean by that, there seems to be a distrust with the number of deaths in Mexico's history with a lot of things.
Yeah, I mean, just so, you know, because we go down that road, let's be specific. I mean, you can go back to the 1960s. There were like incidents of violence from the government to students.
Student massacre that were, in 1968
that were underreported.
Exactly.
You can go more recently, violence against journalists. You can go more recently, violence against activists.
Against women.
And in these cases, the reports from both national and oftentimes local government is to not report it or undersell it or misrepresent the numbers. So that doubt of the Mexican people
even
is
even the COVID deaths that they manipulated that aren't
yes,
it's a die to something else. There's an evident lack of trust with Mexican people and the government. So there is a reason a majority of people are skeptic about the numbers.
There's also this focus on kind of what feels to me like a gross technicality, which is to say no one died at the stadium or no one has died yet.
Yeah.
Right? We keep hearing it. And it's almost like they're making a point to say it. You have studied law in Mexico, Mao. Why would it matter? Why would those seemingly insignificant details of where somebody might die, why would that matter?
It has to do with civil and criminal liability. And I checked this with the source as well, just trying to find out how information was going to be handled, right? When this first report came out that 17 people had died, obviously the number shocked us, right? And you're trying to find answers. And someone said, listen, if someone dies inside or around the stadium, it's not going to be reported that they died inside those premises, right? You will hear that if deaths are reported, right? If those deaths will be reported that happened at the hospital. Saving half is, for example...
Does that keep the clubs and the league kind of out 100%,
of 100%, but it's a different kind of responsibility if death happens inside your premises or at the hospital.
Mm.
The liability, civil and criminal, are different.
That's legal. I think, you know, it's very much a detail, right?
Yeah.
I mean, whether someone has died or died yet, people's lives were, like, irreversibly changed for the worse from what we saw.
Yeah,
there are people who will not come out of this the same person they were before. And that enough, I don't think it matters kind of, like, where you draw that line. The line is at violence, not necessarily at death.
Exactly. That's very, very important. Because when people say, well, no one died, well... It's not that someone has to die in order to demand change,
exactly.
Right? In order to demand better practices. So, I think the way you put it is just the right way to go at it.
Herc?
I don't know how much more I can add to that. I mean, You don't have to see a death or hear about a death to evoke change. The images of families fearing for their lives, I mean, are heartbreaking. The image of a father hand in hand with his wife and their two kids and him instructing the little boy to take his jersey off so he doesn't get beaten by a rival, that should be enough to evoke change, not a death.
Yeah, no, absolutely right. Just incredibly sad scenes. It's not the first time, though, unfortunately, that we've seen this around Mexican soccer. Let's do a kind of unfortunate flashback here. This is 2011 Morelia against Cruz Azul.
Yeah, and just to be very, very clear, none of this compares to what we saw on Saturday, but violence starts in different places, and we have to condemn every sign of violence. It was during a playoff Liguilla match between Cruz Azul and Morelia.
Here's 2014. This is a cup game between San Luis and Tigres. Were you with Tigres at this time, Hurt? You just left?
No.
Just not gotten there yet.
The next season. That's when the Tigres fans came to San Luis, right?
That was the year before, yeah. This was a consequence of the Tigre invasion at the San Luis Stadium. There was a retaliation bad by the San Luis fans a year later.
So that was 2014, 2015, San Luis against Tigres. Oh, no, this is Atlas Chivas in 2015.
I was in Mexico, still playing at this moment. I recall this. To me, the worst part came after the game.
Yeah.
The incidents outside of the stadium were very jarring. And
actually, after this incident is when Jorge Vergara pledged to get rid of the ultras. Yeah.
And then here, this is the Clausura 2016, Santos and Tigres.
Yeah, it's so close in proximities. It's insane. Like, what are you doing? It's a football game.
Yeah, I mean, the images of violence, they were the most extreme.
See, just one police officer. You see that?
Yeah.
That's, I mean, how does that still happen in Mexico after all this precedence?
So here we are, 2017, Veracruz, and again, Tigres.
Yeah, I've been to that stadium. It's an uncomfortable stadium to play. You get rained on with a lot of different types of things.
This is Pirata Fuente, no?
Yeah, Luis Pirata
Fuente. That's when Tuca Ferretti got involved, remember?
Yep. Gignac. Yes, exactly, with the crowd. Tigres is now a very well-traveled team, too.
So we saw the Clásico Tapatío. What about the Clásico Regio? Some violence here from Apertura 2018.
Now, this isn't close to the stadium. Mm-mm. This is crazy. It's not even close to the stadium. And at some point, you will see a vehicle try to run people off the road. I repeat, it is a football game. Football is the most important thing of things that are not important.
Now, Harry, it's important to remind everyone, most of these fights don't have to do with the sport itself.
Nothing to do with the sport. And this was San Luis Querétaro. Now, they are rivals, right?
I mean, I've been to that rivalry many times, and it's always a high-risk game. This was sad to see because it happened in my hometown.
San Luis Querétaro there from Apertura 2019.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cristina Alexander of ESPN Deportes joins us next here on Football America. She was actually at that match, and in a little bit, Cristina, I would love to get your perspective on that. But first things first, I'm just kind of curious, you anchor SportsCenter on ESPN Deportes, just how big of a story is this in Mexico, and how are you guys covering it?
Hi, guys. It's great to be here on Football Americas. Happy to be here. Sad it's for this particular reason. It's the biggest story, Sebi and Mao and Herc. You guys know what this means, again, because we have to talk about this one more time. And with all those incidents that you guys just reviewed on here is why this is still such a big story, because it keeps happening. And the question is why this keeps happening. And what you guys were talking about with all of these kind of previous incidents, why are we still seeing these kind of images? I honestly saw the images and remembered that last game that you guys were talking about. But it's being called the darkest day in Mexican soccer history. And that's something that I think reflects perfectly with these images and what you guys were talking about.
Now, Cristina, we've talked about Mikel Arriola, Liga MX president, Gallos ownership, barras, ultras, but who is the media really focusing on right now?
Mikel Arriola. I think that's where everybody is looking towards. The pressure is on him because he's the one that can really put his foot down, really take advantage of the situation. Yeah, the owners can maybe talk about their perspective. Yeah, maybe they can talk about, you know, really disappearing this Querétaro team, which would also be just a large hit with what you guys were talking about. But I think mainly Mikel Arriola, I think the big question is, why is the ban for this season only for the Querétaro Stadium and for the visiting ultras? Why are we still talking about local ultras? Because I've had time to think about it because it's been so chaotic the last 36 hours and wondering why we only have 15 warrants out for arrest as well, which is another conversation if you guys want to talk about that. But I'm asking, you know, why we're still talking about local ultras as well. Because as you guys know, that's not going to stop the violence. We can talk about a Rayados Tigres game, and if they're playing at Universitario, we can talk about the Rayados fans waiting right outside that stadium just to have that same fight that they were going to have inside the stadium, and all of these other scenarios as well. Maybe we're going to, you know, talk about Atlas trying to get revenge, and I'm not trying to get ahead of myself or think that that's going to happen, because I really don't want that to happen. But I don't think that's going to necessarily stop these kind of violent situations. Mikel Arriola has a responsibility, and you know, we have to be really serious about this. It's a life or death situation. And like you guys said as well, we have to draw the line at violence. Just because nobody died, and that's what the reports that we're seeing, doesn't mean that this is something that urgently needs to stop now, for once and for all. And Mikel Arriola knows that he has the power to at least help take the proper steps to stop this.
Christina, I couldn't help watching those images on social media and feel a pit in my stomach, just like a very hollow feeling. I'm sure the guys next to me felt the same way. You've actually been in that situation. You've been field levels, a field reporter, San Luis versus Querétaro the last time this happened. What was that experience like for you?
It was terrible. It was unexpected. And I honestly didn't ever think that I was going to be in that kind of situation. Obviously, you think about it, you've seen images. Herc, you know what it means to have a Clásico. But before we were going to start this game, I had the comisario come up to me and talk to me through the steps of the security and if something happened. But he was very casual about it, saying, like, I don't think anything's going to happen. But, you know, kind of saying, like, legally he has to tell me what steps I should take if something were to happen. I had an extra security guard with me, which hadn't happened for any of the other games. It was obviously rated as a AAA match, which is rated as a high-risk game. So I kind of had heard about what this Clásico was with San Luis and Querétaro, and it kind of just happened out of nowhere, to be completely honest. I mean, as a field reporter, you have to focus on what's happening in the field. So I was focusing on, you know, the plays, if the player was down, etc. And all of a sudden, I saw a girl being passed by from, on a stretcher. And I looked away respectfully because I thought maybe, you know, she's having, I don't know, an epileptic episode. And then all of a sudden I hear Roberto Gomez Junco and Jorge Pietrasanta, commentator and analyst at the stadium with me that day, talk about what was going on actually in the section right to my left. And I started seeing a brawl. And the thing is, Herc, you talked about this pit in your stomach. I got that same pit in my stomach when I saw these images, because it was play by play exactly what I saw of Querétaro fans running from one part of the stadium to the other, and San Luis fans as well. I mean, they looked like little ants just finding each other. All of a sudden, I felt a push behind me, and I looked around, and there were so many people on the field, you know, to help with evacuation situations. Was pulled to the locker rooms, which is what they had told me. You're going to go here. You're going to be in the locker rooms if anything were to happen. Of course, I didn't expect to be there. And, you know, as a journalist doing my job, I had to kind of keep my cool on air. But at dinner, I was shaking. I was shaking. My dad was like, I can't get a hold of you. So it's definitely a very impactful situation. And of course, you know, if I were ever to cover another San Luis Querétaro game, I would definitely have that same fear. It's awful.
Christina, scenes we hope to never see again, but as you tell us, scenes that are unfortunately all too familiar to those who love Mexican soccer. All right, there she is, Christina Alexander of ESPN Deportes. Thanks so much for joining us here on Football Americas.
Thanks, guys.
All right, gentlemen, then just a few seconds left here. We have covered a lot of ground. Any final thoughts? Herc, I'll start with you.
Just sadness, you know, impotence, just frustrated, you know. Part of me feels ashamed.
Yeah.
You know, it's I feel like a representative of Liga MX, like an ambassador to it on this side of the States, and these images aren't a representation of its people, and that to me is frustrating.
I said on Ahora o Nunca earlier today that sometimes when we talk about sports, that's what we do, that's our job. Sometimes things happen in the world, right? And we are this outlet for everyone else. The world has a lot of features. You can come to us and we'll talk sports and we'll have fun. The moment we become the news, we as a sports industry, we become the news because of things like that, it's heartbreaking. I just don't have another way to put it. And being Mexican-born and knowing what happens in Mexico nowadays in terms of society, we always thought that sports was that outlet that was going to be shielded from those situations. And to realize, to come to that realization that sports now also are a part of that is very sad. But again, I'm trying to stay positive and feel that we're going to be able to go back to the stadiums, have fun, and understand that's our safe place, because right now it's not.
Yeah. A sad day and a dark chapter for Mexican football, and we will continue to cover it here on Football Americas in the coming shows, coming weeks, and the coming months. From Mauricio Pedrosa, Hercules Gomez, I'm Sebastian Salazar. Thanks for watching us, and we will see you back here on Thursday for another edition of the show on ESPN+.